morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday, the 2nd of September. Very nice to have you, as it always is. And we welcome you. We're going into a holiday weekend. Hopefully you have wonderful things planned. And if not, hopefully you just have a wonderful weekend with whatever mundane thing you're going to do. That's fine, too. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get on with the topics of the day. WAMC's Alan Shartuck, I know, is busy. He's got a big gig tomorrow night, so we welcome him to the proceedings. Good morning, Alan.
I wasn't going to even mention it, but as long as you have at the benefit for the Berkshire Ramblers at the Guthrie Center, 413-528-1955, and the seats are going like crazy now.
Well, great. Good morning, and nice to have you aboard here.
Thank you, Joe. You too.
All right. Now, Rosemary Armeo is here, and I know you've got a big gig tomorrow.
I am. I'm busy, too. Saturday, September 12th at the Schenectady County Public Library. I'm going to be one of 9 TEDx speakers at a TED event. And you know how difficult it is for me to talk.
Yeah.
So I'm practicing.
Should be tough. What is your topic? Do you know?
Yes, it's about lessons for the press, politicians, and the public from, guess what? The elections of 2016.
Well, there are many lessons, are there not?
No, there's a few.
Yes. Barbara Smith, author, activist, and panelist. Good morning. How are you?
I have nothing to report.
Okay. You've had a busy summer. You can take a week or two off. That's good. That's good for you. Well, good morning. Welcome. I should mention that Rosemary is the head of the journalism, director of the journalism department at the University at Albany. I can't forget that, or they get mad at me.
My bosses will cough.
Rosemary doesn't care. The bosses get mad. Well, good morning. Welcome. And let's get to it. We have a lot to talk about, as we always do on the program. And we begin with the, we'll talk about the Trump immigration conflicting signals. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, but as the dust started to settle, of what happened on Wednesday, of Donald Trump going to Mexico and then making a major speech in Phoenix that night, and to really outline, as the New York Times says, in his usual bullying tone, his latest priorities on immigration. Yet the juxtaposition of Mr. Trump's dual performances was so jarring that his true vision and intentions on immigration was hard to discern. He dismayed an almost unrecognizable demeanor during his afternoon in Mexico, appearing measured and diplomatic, while hours later he took the stage at his campaign rally and denounced illegal immigrants on the whole as a criminally minded and dangerous group that sows terror in communities and commits murders, rapes, and other heinous violence. Mr. Trump's mixed message on whom he would deport and when and how the government would go about removing people from the country were further muddled by the incendiary language in the Phoenix speech, a deliberate effort by campaign advisors to draw attention to his criticism of illegal immigrants rather than the specifics of his plan.
Okay, I'll jump in.
Okay.
I was expecting Alan. I liked Lawrence O'Donnell's. I liked his analysis that really he did soften. And what he is proposing now is not unlike what we're seeing from the Obama administration, which is to everyone is subject to arrest. However, the people who are really being deported are those who have criminal records. That's exactly what Trump proposed, very different than his original. We're going to hunt up 11.5 million people and ship them all out probably in the first 2 hours of his new administration. But he delivered that softened message in the old bullying, hectoring tones. It's like he wants his cake and eat it too. He wants suburban white voters who are afraid to vote for him to say, come on to my side. But he also doesn't want to de-energize his base, which is as xenophobic as he is, he thinks.
And yesterday, while he was being interviewed on this and saying, because many people were saying that there was the harsh rhetoric that there often was, he said, no, I am softening. He admitted that. He said, I'm softening.
Yeah, I think it's really true, and you're seeing the reaction has been extraordinary. Ann Coulter is relieved. Her book is all like, that's the only thing he could do that would make us give up on him is soften on immigration, which is exactly what he's done. Yeah. She's saying, oh, yeah, it's all okay now. And yet, how many members of his Latino Advisory Council have said, okay, that's enough, I've had it, I'm out of here?
Three, we were talking.
Well, yeah. It may be as many as half are considering it, though, yeah. Half of the 30 people.
Alan?
Well, it's fascinating because if you look at the demographics in the polling, you know, something like 4% of African-American folks say have anything good to say about Trump. But if you look at the Latino numbers, it's much higher. I mean, it's not anything near a majority or halfway, but it's like 27%, something like that. And so I think Trump knows that if he's going to get any of those votes, he's got to signal in some way that he's amenable, you know, to the Hispanic culture and to Hispanic voters. And I think that they just don't know what to do. Now, I have never believed that the Ann Coulters and the others mean a thing now. I think that was good during the primaries. But I think during the general election, he's got them. They're not going to Hillary Clinton. So he's got to go in another direction. And his advisors are telling him that. It's quite clear.
Barbara?
I really hate to be subjected to all things Trump. I've heard that some of our listeners feel similarly. I don't have much to say except that, to me, it's the same old thing. I think that his saying that he's softening, he may be softening because he knows that it's losing him votes, right, or potentially losing him votes to be presenting himself and saying the kinds of things that he's saying and has been saying in the past. But the way that he delivered that speech was just horrifying. It was just so horrifying and so hateful, talking about deporting Hillary. It was just so obvious to me. It was like one of those early German rallies before.
Doesn't that make it important for us then to discuss it and to talk about it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm just saying it's hard for me to be subjected to it because I'm one of his targets. That's why.
Mm. No, I understand. Yeah, no, I understand that. Yeah. I understand that. I just, you know, with the listeners, we get a lot of this about, well, you know, Trump. Well, you know, I don't. It seems like we have to talk about this.
Oh, no, I fully agree with that. I'm just talking about how difficult it is to have to immerse myself.
I understand. That I get.
It's right. So odious that even when he's trying to coddle up, to say, hey, I'm one of you, he does it by eating a bowl of tacos. Do you remember that?
Cinco de Mayo. Yeah.
Oh, and he talks to blacks, but he does it in a white neighborhood and says, your life is a hellhole. Why not vote for me?
What do you have to lose? Like, and then also he said something about, he went back to the old myth, falsehood of immigrants stealing Americans' jobs, and specifically aiming that at black and Latinos and Latinas in the United States. And it's like, really, do you really believe this person cares about whether you have a job or not? Mm-hmm. It's just all empty and all just all lies.
It isn't even good public relations, Barbara. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, even if it were done completely insincerely and only to get votes and he's not going to pay any attention to it, it's not even done well. It's offensive on every level.
I totally agree.
And I like the word that you used, odious, because you feel like you should listen, that you want to listen, you want to find out.
That's what Barbara said.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, and it really is, you feel that you should, and then when you're halfway through it, you're like, oh, God.
It's frightening. and the reaction of the audience is frightening.
It's
just frightening.
It is because it
becomes... Because them screaming. They're screaming for our
blood. It's a mob mentality.
Yeah, it totally is.
Yeah. And here's another thing. Go ahead, Alan.
Somebody wrote in yesterday and said, if you turn the sound down, you can just imagine what it's like in German.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I know that's insulting, and I apologize in advance. But also, I'll also apologize for something else. I've used the word schizzy or schizoid about Trump before, and I've heard from mental health professionals who say, how dare you? I don't mean it in a clinical sense. I mean it in a one day it's one thing, and the next day it's the exact opposite reverse. And it seems to be in his own mind that he can do that without being held accountable for those reversals. And so that's what I mean by using the word. But it does seem that way to me. I mean,
I've gotten those letters. I've gotten letters from those listeners as well, Alan, and they tell me that what we're describing is multiple personality, not schizophrenia.
Well,
it's
yes,
not
I'm,
the
but
objection
see, I'm not
to
getting
mental
in,
illness.
Yeah,
but
I'm not. Well, of course not, and I'm not getting into mental illness, and I'm not a diagnostician. That's clear.
Right.
I'm just using it in a broader sense. And by the way, no apologies. I'll keep doing it. Thank you.
The other thing that we're in danger at, I think, from this Trump overload is that some really important and kind of shocking investigative reporting is coming out, and no one seems to be paying much attention to it. Time magazine last week had just an amazing story following up on a charge that Marco Rubio made way back during the debates when he said, take a look at the Polish workers you have working illegally in Trump Towers. Well, Time magazine did that, got all the documents. It's solid reporting. And found not just that he used illegal workers, but he used them, underpaid them. And when they came and said, hey, Mr. Trump, we need our money, he went to the authorities and said, hey, there are these illegal workers who have gotten into my site. This is extraordinary stuff. And also Mother Jones did it with his modeling agency. The same thing. He's enticing young women who are looking for a job and a career, and then keeps them in horrible conditions, doesn't pay them. It isn't just violating the laws on immigration. It's exploiting the immigrants themselves.
Well, there's only one person on earth who really matters to Donald Trump, and that's Donald Trump. Everybody else can take a flying leap. I think he is concerned about some of his children. But the thing is that
Not in a healthy way.
But he is so just completely self-focused. It doesn't matter what happens to other people. Polish workers who are building his wealth, other people, the women in the modeling agency, etc. They don't matter. There's only one person who matters. It's Donald Trump. And if he, God forbid, becomes president, that's exactly the kind of administration he'll run.
Meanwhile, if just for a moment, if we can suspend reality for a moment and say, just for a moment, that we want to think that we're in a normal campaign season, a normal campaign cycle where we want to discuss a candidate's view on the issue, on an issue. Do we know what the Donald Trump plan on immigration is as of this moment?
Well, I would say it's to continue what Barack Obama is doing, but with more talking about it.
Yeah, but also with more inflammatory rhetoric about it.
Yeah.
But do you get a sense?
That is the scary. That's the scary part. Going back again to the 1930s, when you inflame people, bad things happen, and that's the point. Barbara, you're exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And is it because? But then, do you take him? Then do you take him at his word? Because it's been such a work in progress. It's been so all over the place. Well, that's what I mean. I don't know,
You better take him at his word. I mean, he's telling you what he's going to do. He's inflaming the public. No, it hasn't really changed. If you look at the Arizona speech, it was the oomph. You know, it was the way in which it was presented. It was the kinds of hints that he was giving there that make it clear that nothing's really changed, in my opinion.
I'm thinking about the quote that Hillary Clinton often cites from Maya Angelou, which is something like, when somebody tells you who they are or shows you who you are, who they are, believe them.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, originally he said he's going to deport 11 million people. So that seems to be, that is no longer on the table, or is it? Or I mean, basically what I'm saying is, can you believe anything he says? And at some point, if you vote for him, is it still going to be the deportation of 11 million people?
You could never believe that deportation. It cannot physically or financially be done. Just like you cannot keep every Muslim out. You cannot. That's unconstitutional. He would be, once in office, God forbid, I'm crossing myself as I say that, he would be stopped by legal measures, by political measures.
Yeah, you show so.
But that's his intention.
I mean, Well, let me put it this way. He'll get to name three or maybe four Supreme Court judges. And if you think he's going to name people who are going to put a stop to his nonsense, forget it. He won't. He'll name people who he knows will find a reason, as we have seen in the majority, to go along.
Okay, I do not believe that, Alan. Even the most conservative, even Scalia and Clarence have stopped when it comes to actually gutting the Constitution. And you're talking about ripping out the First Amendment. I just don't see the court.
Well, it's a question of how far you go. I mean, we have seen, for example, that efforts to disenfranchise African-American voters, for example, have been approved by that court, right? I mean, they have. And we know that only because of the absence of Scalia, we have sort of put a stop to it for now. But I think, you know, you would be I hate to use this word for you especially, Rosemary, but you would be naive to think that he can't find people to go along with him. He can.
I think that the danger increases, but we have a lovely system. Unlike Donald Trump, I believe in it. And Scalia, the members of that court are old, and they do die off. It's set up that way. It's set up that you're there for life. So when you're 80, and you're gonna pass on. And now you're watching while that law, the voter right law, was gutted, the appeals courts, which are filled with conservatives, they're still upholding it.
Yeah, but only only because it's 4-4, and
that's
would check whether these I would check whether these courts really are all that conservative. You know, remember that the Bushes were there for a long time. They put a lot of young guys on the courts, all the federal courts, who were of a fairly conservative bent. So I think one cannot. One cannot dismiss how important the Supreme Court choices are and what could be done as a result of that. It scares me to death.
We are coming up against a break, so let me pause there. We'll get some letters when we come back. We have several, and we'll go to those, and then we'll move on. We have some other very important topics to discuss. We want to get to those. But we welcome your letters, as we always do. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. A reminder, 140 characters or so. Some of the letters are getting pretty long, so if you want us to read them on the air, keep them on the short side. That works out better for all of us. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, and we'll continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you back with us. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Barbara Smith. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Roundtable@WAMC.org. You know where we get letters like the ones Alan's about to read.
Wow, did we get a lot of letters? Okay. So, in response to Alan's reference to pre-World War II Germany, I believe Trump is sounding less like Hitler and more like Ezra Pound's broadcast from Italy during the war. And Peter says, good morning, Roundtable. No, that's no good because it's a, what do you call that when you forward another person's like, a link. We don't do those here.
Yeah.
How you say that? Link. Trump. Trump is a political genius, and I am not voting for him. The hysteria I hear coming through the radio is astounding. There's no way to take him at his word since it has changed countless times in the last year, and then it goes on, but over the limit. And Tom says, now, how does Hillary differ with Trump? Please look at the differences. In other words, Hillary is measured and thoughtful about her discussion of every issue. She doesn't simply harp on one issue, immigration, but is concerned about other issues, mental health, education, the economy, the environment, et cetera, on their own and as they relate to each other. Ben says, I listen to the roundtable on a regular basis. The only subject that seems to be of interest to you all is the presidential election. It is tiresome to listen to you all day after day pontificate about what's going on with this horse race. Why not another topic? Surely there's something else happening in the world that you could comment on. Okay, there you go.
Notice anybody he didn't suggest one.
Also, by the way, we've been through this many times, but when we do another topic, as we do many, many times on the program, as we do in the second part of most of our shows, nobody writes about those. There's no mail that comes as a result of those.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something, Joe, just for the sake of supporting what you've just said. If I do a Trump show, from the first minute on Vox Pop, every light on every phone is up. If I do a state legislative show and corruption in the state legislature, I have to beg for people to call in. If you do a show on mental health, you have to beg for people to call in. So, yeah, we've met the enemy and he is us, says Pogo. On to more. Okay, Lisa, do you get it? The reason why Donald Trump is able to inflame people is because they have been ignored under Democratic administrations. They have nothing to lose, and Hillary and the Democrats have only one tactic of fear to get us to vote for her. And she has shown us who she is with Ken Salazar, fracking, TPP, and no-fly zones in Syria. The only progressive candidate is Jill Stein. Were you going to say something, Rosemary?
No.
Oh, okay. Kevin O'Connor. Oh, Kevin, you give 1 hour next week to discussing, how about you give 1 hour next week to discussing the pros and cons of Hillary Clinton, and then maybe sometime on the prospects of changes in the House and Senate. You've already given time to one of the third party candidates, and I assume you invited the other one. Well, we certainly have. Okay. And Marissa says, I enjoy the show every morning and appreciate what you do, but in capital letters, I was taken back this morning at the disregard for people with mental illness. What?
Where?
Nobody disregarded people with mental illness. Stop making stuff up. I hate that.
Well, I'd like to jump in. Yeah. I do agree with this writer, because the reason people object to using the terms, clinical terms for people, who don't have the training and are people who haven't been accurately diagnosed, is that you are painting people with one brush. There are actually people who are schizophrenic who are living very difficult and painful lives, and their family members are also living those lives with them, the people who love them. So when one says somebody is schizzy or schizophrenic, it hurts some people who actually are dealing with the reality of that. So I did have a reaction. Didn't say anything at the time, but I'll say something now.
But you said it now, and we, of course, disagree. Okay. And now Bill says, spent the day at the Dems booth in the county fair. One gentleman came by and commented how good Hillary would look in an orange jumpsuit. Trying to stick to the issues, I withheld my first thoughts, but what the heck, Donald would look even better in a straight jacket. Daniel says, Alan is right. Alan's comments about the Supreme Court hit the nail on the head. Rosemary's being naive about the dangers of Trump appointees. Need I remind her of Citizens United? It could be worse under Trump. And David says, recall that the court upheld the Japanese World War II internment, Korematsu versus the United States. I'm giving that one. Paradigm shift. Your panel today totally buys the left-center view of Trump and ignores Clinton Foundation horrors, and that listeners deserve to hear. Do you read and react to anything besides ways to smear Trump? Well, we read your letter. Okay. And Susan Piro. Trump worried about himself is a reflection of the 1%. Hi, your discussion of the Trump exploiting workers made me reflect on how he's representing the CEOs and hedge fund managers, which exploit workers and current laws to enrich themselves. And John says, I feel that Trump isn't so much inciting his followers as giving an existing group of fascist and fascist-leaning people a focal point to organize about. And James said, Hillary, I will vote for Hillary, but do you think that she is not the Hillary of 8 years ago, hence no press conferences, answering questions from the press, some cognitive issues? She's the only real choice now because Trump is a danger to the world, but a matter of concern. You say, oh, my God, Rosemary?
That the cognitive issues, she definitely is not holding press conferences. She's doing other things, and we can question her judgment about whether those are more important than a press conference. But to say that she's not holding them because she can't think right just buys into that ridiculous and completely unsupported idea that she's not healthy.
Eric says, Trump immigration, deporting all of 11 million is still on the table. It was in his speech. He just softened the timeline. All right, and
it actually is not any different than it is now. What he said was that all 11 and a half would be subject to arrest. That is actually true right now. The Obama administration could arrest and deport any of them. They don't, and that's what Trump is saying. He would not either. He would go after the criminals.
Well,
it's
Tracy
exactly the same.
Says, okay. Trump and persona. I'm dismayed by the mental illness labels to explain his, Trump's, behavior. I know people who are mentally ill and do not act like Trump. He is just like LePage. And I don't understand these letters. A dot 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 H. Okay. So let's see here. Michael says, you guys, with your continuous Trump coverage, are giving him just what he wants. Continuous coverage of his ridiculous, ignorant statements and completely ignoring Hillary's program positions. First of all, we don't ignore them. We report on them. We report them on in the news. We report them on in the show. So stop making stuff up. Barry says, we agree the mob mentality plays a part in political speeches and sways some weak-minded viewers. I suggest we remove that element by holding the debates without an audience. The audience has no value in that context.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that.
I wouldn't mind that. Well, I think that's possibly a great idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And who the moderator
maybe,
will be
maybe
also.
We try,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we could try it with one. You know, just try one that way and see what,
yeah,
how it goes.
Yeah.
But, of course, it takes out the entire, concept of the Roman arena with people yelling and screaming and then...
Which is why
maybe
we're in favor
would be
of it.
Bored,
I also think there's a possibility that there could
it.
Be only one debate. I think that Trump cannot get out of them all together. But after the first one, he'll pull that little stunt, if he doesn't do terrifically. He would pull the little stunt that he did during the Republican primary debates and just say, okay, I'm not doing the next one. I'm
right.
going to go have a rally for veterans or something.
Mm-hmm.
So the first
Kevin
one has
says,
to count. Go ahead.
Kevin says, New York Times opinion on Trump. Joe, it must be nice to sit in an ivory tower and criticize Trump's speech on immigration. I wonder, though, if the opinion writer's child or family member had been brutally murdered by a repeat immigration offender with 4, 5, 6 trips into the country, if then they would be that smug. Okay.
Well, it wasn't an opinion writer. We were reading from the speech, just for the record.
And Trump pulled in every person who had ever been the victim of a crime by any immigrant. It was disgusting. There's no group that you can pick, none, that are perfect, that there's no problems with.
And who is doing most of the murders? Well, I know what some people would say, but most of the people who are doing murders in the United States were born here. Am I correct?
You are correct.
I think your point is profound, Rosemary, that you could take any religion, for example,
right.
and line up
right.
anybody mm-hmm. who had been killed by a Jew or a Catholic
yep.
or a Protestant or this or that, and do the same thing he did last night.
Right.
Okay.
Or you could, for example, take police officers who have killed unarmed black and other minority people on the streets in broad daylight. You could take that, for example.
That was more than a fleeting thought as
yeah.
I heard him talking, because I mm-hmm. thought, he doesn't really care about people being killed.
No,
can he vilify and demonize certain groups
so
of people?
So it's one group,
yeah.
police he loves. They
right.
can do no wrong, even when they do wrong. And then there's another group he doesn't like, immigrants, and they can do no right, even when they do lots of right. That's the way it has worked.
And Gregory says something that I love. He says, hey, listeners, sorry, but you got to hear about Trump. He's a presidential
yeah.
candidate. It ain't Joe's fault. Don't kill the messenger. Great work as always, Roundtable. Have a great weekend. And Denise says, I agree with Barbara Smith. I am one of his targets. What is even more frightening than Trump was listening to the howls of approval from his crowd.
Yeah.
And that's from Denise and Saugerties.
She's
and
right.
Peter says, I'm going bankrupt. Every time I hear Trump's voice, I need an EpiPen. Peter.
We'd like that letter.
Yeah, we've given that letter of the week, I think. That's a great letter.
And Anthony says, best since, where's the beef? Good morning, panel. The negative marketing, which has garnered Trump so much free airtime, is the best negative campaign since the famous words quoted by that little old lady, where's the beef? And that's from Anthony. And it goes on.
Clara Peller was the name of that woman.
I remember her.
Narcissist. Rosemary and Alan could take lessons from Barbara on respectful decorum with her thoughtful observations. I must admit, I do refer to Alan as an arrogant narcissist, but I am not a psychiatrist. Your pal, Jade. Lovely. Jeff, lovely.
Yeah, that's pretty funny, too.
You think so?
Well, I mean, she took a shot at both of us, but then it was self-deprecating, too. I think it was cute.
Why was it self-deprecating?
She says she's guilty of the same thing she's berating us for.
Yeah, but she still gets her shot in. Please.
I know.
Oh, please.
That's effective, okay. Alan.
All right. We should take a break. Oh. All right. So let's do that. Okay. We'll take a break, and we'll come back. We'll continue. We have other topics I want to get to, because if we don't, people will get mad. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Georgetown University pledged Thursday to apologize for its role in the slave trade and offered to give admissions preference to the descendants of those sold for the benefit of the school, one of the most aggressive responses to date among the universities trying to make amends for the horrors of slavery. As descendants of people enslaved and sold listened, the school's president promised to give their families a boost in admissions, treating applicants who are descendants of slaves owned by Maryland Jesuits the same as it would those who are children of faculty, staff, and alumni. And it will name a university residence hall after one of the slaves, a man named Isaac. He was 65 in 1838 when he and 271 other slaves were sold. Georgetown took the steps in response to a report from a panel of faculty, staff, students, and alumni that examined the university's ties to slavery, including the sale of men and women in the early 19th century that helped pay off debt at the Jesuit school. Barbara.
There's so much to say about this, but the first thing I would like to say is that I really highly urge all of our listeners to look at the article themselves. The exact title is Georgetown Plans to Apologize for Its Role in Slavery. Washington Post, Nick Anderson, and Susan Sveruga. It's a really good article, and it includes the report itself, which is extremely extensive. It's like, I'm sure, more than 100 pages. And they talk about their entire process, all the events that they had, the research, the appendices, the scholars they brought in. One of the things that I would say, this is unusual in U.S. Society to look at a situation for which one was responsible in relationship to enslavement, and then actually try to figure out ways to rectify that and to be accountable. So this is quite unusual. It's a story in and of itself. And of course, it's a story that was reported earlier this year, too. But what I would submit is that any institution of higher education, any geographic location, including the capital region, any corporation, any church or denomination, you could do a similar study. Thousands and thousands, actually it would be millions and millions of pages of research of what is the relationship of this particular institution to the history of enslavement in the United States, and what are we going to do about it? It has never happened. So mm-hmm. Georgetown is doing something quite unique. Another thing I would suggest, if and when you find the story itself, look at the comments. I always look at the comments, yes. And the comments show how far we still need to go, because right. Most of the comments are incredibly nasty and incredibly negative.
Yep. I was struck. It was like Trumpites were doing all the comments. Does it bother you at all that while it's, yes, lovely research, great intention, there's no money involved? There's no scholarships connected with this? They're saying that if any of the descendants of these families affected apply, they'll be treated just like legacy students. But there's no offer of scholarship. There's no support. There's no payment back.
That I would assume would be addressed through the admissions process. Maybe I'm being naive about that, but it seems to me that when a student applies to a college or a university, there's always a financial aid assessment that's done. Mm-hmm. And although I guess what could have been said is that, and for people who are descendants who apply and who are admitted, there'll be a special pool,
Of
scholarship
of money.
Money. Maybe, yeah, that would have been a way to address it. But I don't assume that there would be no scholarship aid for them, depending upon what their situation
is. Well, it is striking that the apologies took so many decades later to come up with, but there's still no money. There's still no actual, there's not even 40 acres in the mule.
Right. That's right. And maybe with public outcry, maybe that will be the next step for Georgetown.
And there were some folks who were saying that since so many of the descendants of slaves, I have to be careful about how I say this, have been undereducated because of the policies, the educational policy in the United States, that there is this one caveat, which is that they have to meet the standards to get in. That may be a little bit suspicious also.
Well, that's a complicated issue. But what it points to is that endemic white supremacy and racial discrimination breeds more unequal or additional unequal outcomes.
Right.
So how do you
exactly.
fix it? How do you fix a system of oppression and discrimination when the whole system is discriminatory?
Mm-hmm.
So over here you make the decision, we'll admit all descendants of this particular group of African Americans. Over there you have, but it's quite likely that 75% of them went to substandard schools.
Right.
Georgetown
that's
is not
exactly
trying to
right.
fix the substandard schools. It's
right.
just like, and that's why affirmative action is so difficult and can be a slippery slope, because it's how do you rectify a situation that was just so wrong to begin with?
Right, and has continued for
Well, the City University, the City University of New York, you will remember, decided they were going to admit everybody. Remember that?
Yes.
Years back, they said everybody would get in. City University, it's a city college itself, which had more, I believe, Nobel Prize winners than anyone, you know, at the time. There was a huge outcry from the middle class, and they, quote, fixed it. And I believe Herman Badillo was the chair of the board that quote, fixed it and set up the old standards. So, as you say, Barbara, this is a slippery slope.
And as somebody who's so committed to education and the highest quality of education for all, it's one of the issues in our society I most wish to address and I wish that we could fix, because I think it would solve so many of our other problems if everybody had access
to
that kind of education.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, in the few minutes that we have left while we're talking about universities, what in the world do you think Penn State was thinking?
Wow.
This is so... Penn State is honoring Joe Paterno, and you may remember that Joe Paterno, the longtime coach of the Penn State football team. Now, Jerry Sandusky, who was an assistant coach, is spending the rest of his life in jail for sexually abusing children. It has come to light since Joe Paterno was aware of the situation in many documents in court filings, that he was aware of the situation and nothing was done. And there has been a great outcry from the community. And so at this point, while the college starts to work on their reputation, it seems odd they have decided that in a September football game they will honor Joe Paterno, who is passed. And you just wonder, well, what's the positive in that?
I have a one-word answer. Ready? I have a one-word answer. Money. You know, they want money from their alumni and everybody else.
But doesn't that hurt? Don't you think that hurts by controversy?
Yeah, all the number of people who won't contribute because that's just such a nasty thing to do. Both of these stories.
You think they've done any research? Yeah. Do you think they've done any research on whether or not they lose or gain more? My bet is that they have.
Do you think there could be a reaction that they hadn't researched because there will be an outcry?
From the alumni, from the people who give them the money? No.
What were you going to say about both of these stories?
I think both of these stories point to a difficulty we have when we're judging the past on modern standards. Georgetown made one decision saying, nope, we're responsible, even though this happened long before we were aboard. Penn State is saying, no, Joe Paterno did good things before he did the bad thing. It's like Bill Cosby. Is he still a great comedian? You know,
and those priests who decided to sell the people who were enslaved, I bet they did some good things too.
Exactly. So it's judging. It's we in the present, how we judge the past. Woodrow Wilson is that his legacy is in some question now because he was a pretty bad person in addition to being a great person that he has been honored for.
A member of the KKK.
Exactly. Yeah. So what do we do about that now? What's the proper response?
I think it's really complicated, just as I was saying a few minutes ago. How do you rectify the gravest injustice in the present day? But I like what it was Edward Ball who wrote Slaves in the Family. He was being interviewed by Terry Gross once, and he said one of the most wonderful things I ever heard a white person say about their relationship to all this, which is, no, I am not responsible, but I am accountable.
That's great.
And you know, and he was fired. That's the other thing.
Yeah, his last days were not happy.
No, I mean, besides the illness, obviously.
And Bill Cosby is suffering, you know, a horrible, horrible fate right now.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're out of time, so unfortunately, we have to end there. We'll be back on Tuesday. We're off on Monday because of the holiday, but we're back on Tuesday. We'll continue. And we'll have more roundtable. Thank you all for being with us. Great to have you. And have a great weekend. And we'll be back after this short break.